Get caught up, Pac-12 and more. Our guest has a tremendous resume, high-level player with the Huskies, all-academic honoree, an assistant coach at a few stops, including Oregon State, head coach at Portland State, Pac-12 Network Analysis, and, of course, co-host. Rip City Morning, 6 to 9 a.m., Rip City Radio, a.m. 620 in Portland. On Twitter, try the handle at Coach Burton. Nigel Burton joins us. Coach, how are you and yours doing during these nutty times we're living in?
We just take it day by day. Today's pretty good so far. So the sun is shining and mowed my lawn and got some work done. So shoot, man, can't ask for more than that.
All right. It's a good starting point. We spoke over the summer, seems like a different lifetime ago. And since then, the NBA has progressed through that 8-game rush to end the regular season. Now we're into the finals. But specifically on the Trailblazers, after a season that was so harshly impacted by injuries until the restart, how nice was it to just see them make a run like that with just, it seemed like, game after game, just entertaining and down to the wire?
Oh, man, it was all great. It was great seeing the Blazers come back. It was great seeing Dame just become not just a West Coast, Western Conference feel-good story, but for people to see his dominance on full display as he went bananas. I'm trying to remember what the number was off the top of my head. It was something like 120 points or something in a four-game span. It was insanity, the stuff that he was doing. And then we got to see some other guys, right? We saw guys like Gary Trent Jr. step up and become this guy. And we saw Melo be the version of Melo we all remembered. And so it was great. Unfortunately, they ran into the juggernaut that is the Los Angeles Lakers. Even taking a game from them, it was great to see the iteration of the Blazers that I think people, unfortunately, because of injury, hadn't been able to see pre-COVID through the regular season.
Obviously, you and Dan being up there, you talk hoops all the time and watching a bunch of sports. But, when you think about the NBA coming to that decision, going into the bubble, playing games, the upsets, Milwaukee getting knocked out, the Clippers losing a 3-1 lead. So, overall, that just the NBA fan in you, how much have you enjoyed what we got to see leading right up to, game four tonight?
No, man, I've loved it. I know people have been talking about, the fact that the NBA ratings have been down, but consider it's like a perfect storm right now, which for sports fans is fantastic. But for each individual league, has been a nightmare. I mean, everybody's normally your ratings go down during an election year, so you got that. Then you've got the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, the NFL, and college football all happening at the same time. And so, the fact that people are trying to pin ratings on, whatever, social justice issues, Black Lives Matter, that, the NBA is in particular picked up at this gist. It's purposely ignorant. When you just look at just the general fact of, look, man, there are so many things vying for people's attention right now. I mean, I'm trying to watch the NBA finals, and I'd already watched two NFL games. I had NFL Red Zone on. The 5:30 game was kicking off. We had a doubleheader yesterday in the NFL. We got game four of the NBA. We got college football be playing on Thursday, Friday and Saturday, in addition to the NBA game five on Friday. I mean, it's insanity. It's great insanity. I love it. I love the insanity because, I got something to hang out and enjoy and talk about the next morning. But it's been crazy, and this is a year that nobody will forget for multiple reasons. But for sports fans, as sad as some of it's been, it's also been kind of cool, at least at this point.
Yeah, I've been able to occasionally pull rank with my wife. Usually I got a split. She's like, well, you watch that, now I'm going to watch this, you go in the other room. I'm like, look, we should be happy there's sports on and I still have a job.
Exactly. Remember those 4 months when there was nothing on that I could watch? This is makeup for it. I get it twice.
There you go. I played that card. We continue with Nigel Burton of the Pac-12 Network, Rip City Radio. Of course, the announcement came down first that Pac-12 football was going to start. Then we got the schedule. So now that you've seen the lay of the land and, you know, the changing of course and the decision that if all the pieces are in place, we've got this schedule. What was your reaction to the conference deciding, look, we can do this, but it's got to be the right way?
Oh, I mean, I was proud. I was really proud of the fact, and this is no lip service, no nonsense. Like, you know, I saw some of these other conferences hard charge their way. We don't really give a damn. We need this money. We got to run money through the state of Oklahoma. Was one quote. You had coaches out there bragging about 75 to 100 of their players had been infected with the coronavirus, and so they felt like, oh, that's some form of a badge of honor or something that was good. When they have no idea what the long-term consequences of this thing is going to end up being for these kids. And I felt like the Pac-12 was very methodical about their process, and they stuck to their principles of, look, we're gonna look at student-athlete safety first. And obviously the Clavel deal was a game-changer, just like Larry Scott said, in terms of being able to test on a daily basis when someone becomes – if somebody does become positive, they can pull them out before they infect a whole host of others. We've yet to see any transmission that I'm aware of through an actual football game, but that doesn't really preclude the fact that you've got meetings and travel and meals and all the things that can spread like wildfire through a team. And so, I was just really proud of the fact that, they didn't let other things get in the way. The kids still wanted to play. The coaches still wanted to coach. The fans still wanted to see it. The parents were supportive. But they had to make sure they did it the right way. And when you see the way that they've got not just the Quidel deal, but even the 24-hour PCR testing, they've got the, when someone becomes positive, they have to pass a number of protocols, including EKGs and things to make sure that the myocarditis issue is the one that that particular student athlete has to worry about. I just really felt like, and then, you see right now, I mean, we're watching the NFL and we're seeing just teams getting decimated with, everything from knee injuries that are unavoidable to a lot of soft tissue injuries because of guys not being able to train properly, getting ready for the season. And so, my initial reaction was I would hope that they were going to play on October 31st, but as we keep seeing more and more of these soft tissue injuries, the more that I'm good with the fact that Pac-12 kind of took their time, and hopefully not only will we not see any interruptions, we'll see less injury.
You know, one of the narratives have been, seven total games, the Big 12, ACC are playing, the SEC started up, Big 10 is going to start earlier, and the concern about maybe making it into the playoff mix. I've always felt with college football, things play out, and if a true power emerges, whether it be USC, Oregon, it's a weird season, but if they reveal themselves to be a powerhouse, I think they'll make a legit case to the selection committee. What do you think?
No, absolutely. I mean, here's the biggest thing. The best thing for the Pac-12 is to not play and let the Big 12 decimate itself. I mean, that's been the best Pac-12 game that we've had, is just watching Oklahoma and Texas, just absolutely blow up on themselves. I mean, at this point, Oklahoma State is really the only viable candidate they have to even get into the college football playoff. I mean, you got Miami is ranked, North Carolina is ranked from the ACC. I'm pretty sure Clemson will take care of one of those this weekend when they probably beat Miami by 45 points. I think it'll be fine. And then you consider the fact that Notre Dame's already lost some games. You've had Baylor's lost games. I mean, you see with a lot of these programs that have not been able to test on a daily basis, they're actually losing football games. And so don't be surprised when you see, some SEC teams, some ACC games getting still postponed, which I would actually be really surprised if we saw that from the Pac-12 by the time Pac-12 play gets started. So I think things are going to be just fine when it's all said and done.
I do. I think a lot takes care of itself. Few final thoughts for Coach Burton. Obviously, you're close to the Washington program. We spoke over the summer about the new coach, Jimmy Lake. Obviously, Jacob Eason now is in Indy. That quarterback battle, Jacob Sermon, a familiar name here, the backup last year, Dylan Morris was a redshirt. You've got Chase Garber's brother. I know it's early, but what are you hearing about who might have the inside track to be the new Husky quarterback?
I'll be honest with you, man. Jimmy has kept that thing like you need a biometric data. You need a safe. You need keys and safety codes. I mean, so far it's been mum coming out of that thing. You know, I've seen all those guys play. I remember watching Sermon. You know, in terms of calling the spring game a couple years ago, and you saw the way that he just moved around and threw the football, and he looked like possibly more athletic version of Jacob Eason. I mean, he has a cannon for an arm. He's a big-bodied guy. You know, the other two guys are kind of more in the mold of like a Kellen Moore, you know, go down a list of the Boise State quarterbacks who are just really smart guys who could maneuver their football team. So it'll be interesting to see. The best part is, I mean, Washington's got some weapons that are back, especially guys who were banged up last season. And so on the offensive side of the ball, and so it'll be interesting to see kind of how all that melds together and whether they keep the Trudeau alive on the defensive side of the ball.
All right, a couple thoughts on the guys down here. Program now in the capable hands of Mario Cristobal. Certainly they're getting a lot of preseason love, but when you actually look at it with Herbert gone, Sewell is gone on the offensive line, along with the rest of the starters, Troy Dye, some key guys in the secondary. So while they've recruited out of their minds, and what Coach Cristobal has built gives you reason for optimism, would I be more accurate in saying they still lost a lot? So with that optimism, be a little guarded.
I mean, I understand being guarded. You know, as I was told early on, man, the number one job of a head coach is to manage expectations.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I think they like those expectations in Eugene. You know, when you look at the amount of the talent that they have coming, the speed, the size, the physical nature. Obviously, you got Thibodeau, and you got all these different guys left and right who, you know, one guy opts out, another guy steps in who's a 4 or 5 star guy. You know, a guy declares early, they got another 4 or 5 star guy who's ready to step up. And so, you know, I will say all that talent, though, you still have to sometimes you just have to learn some of those lessons that come with playing games. So the coaches are still going to have their hands full with, you know, trying to get some guys ready as soon as possible to really make a run with this football team.
And lastly, I mentioned Herbert, and of course, I go back to the morning of September 19th, and you didn't know when he was going to even make his pro debut. Now he's gone toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, and sure, there have been moments with, you know, in each game when you're like, yeah, he's a rookie, but overall, how do you think this young guy has done his whole 3 starts?
Oh, it's been phenomenal. I mean, you know, it's funny. I was just talking about on my show. I said, you know, everybody's talking about Dak Prescott and the crazy numbers he's been putting up. I said, unfortunately, I've watched those games. And I watched 3 guys from Cleveland literally have the interceptions bounce off their foreheads. And, you know, as impressive as the numbers were, there were some moments that kind of make you say, I don't know if I'm buying it. I've watched Justin Herbert, and you've seen a guy who was, you know, you talk about preparing like, you know, like you're the starter, and then all of a sudden he found out he was. And he was ready for that moment. It was the coolest thing ever to watch and to hear the story about his family not even knowing he was going to play. And all of a sudden, like, wait, what do you mean he's playing? And they're scrambling around trying to find a way to, you know, to tape the game and watch and all those different things. And then, you know, watching a team that was actually prepared and ready for him, and yet he still threw for 300 yards. And then, you know, last week was really cool. I got a chance to watch you know, most of that game of him and Brady going back and forth. And just when it looked like the GOAT had taken over and he was going to, you know, put the young guy and his team, tell him, okay, little guy, appreciate it. You can go home now. Next, you know, bam, Justin comes back with a 70-yard bomb and says, nah, hold on, old man. I still got a little something for you. So it was really, really cool to watch his command, to watch the way that his team reacts to him and all those things. I'm sure Duck fans have to watch, too, and be like, you know, he's super emotional. Yeah, I remember him jumping into his offensive lineman's arms, and he's running down the field, and you're like, what the hell was that when he was a freshman? I don't remember him being like that. But it is absolutely cool to watch, and as a Pac-12 fan, man, he is. It's really cool, and an Oregonian to watch and root for him, even if I'm a Husky. It's been really cool to watch him. And I'm happy to see him be successful.
You just can't help yourself, can you, Coach?
Hey, trust me. My wife is a Duck, so Okay. we have a split household. Oh, we got the trifecta, man. I'm a Husky. She's a Duck, and our son was born in Corvallis. So there's just all kinds of weird stuff going on in our family. So,
I want to see the film of Thanksgiving at your house, folks. He's Nigel Burton. Keep up on Twitter at Coach Burton. Of course, Rip City Radio, AM 620 mornings, 6 to 9 a.m. Coach, it's always my pleasure to have you on and hear what you have to say. Glad your family's doing great. And, of course, wishing you all during these nutty times health, wellness, and I'm going to throw in sanity. Thanks for spending some time.
Appreciate it, Steve. Anytime, man. Same to you.
All right. Take it easy.